Welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, folks, the 2026 Grand Slam season is officially behind us, but not before some drama at Royal Birkdale for the 154th Open Championship. Rex, I'm not even sure that we discussed Ryan Fox on the Saturday Night Preview podcast, and yet he is the winner, making four birdies in his last six holes. We're going to be going into his final round in forensic detail, in particular, those final 90 minutes. But overall, as we sit back here now on Sunday evening recording the recap show, what are sort of your big picture takeaways from the day that was?
First and foremost, I'm going to do away with the nonsense. The nonsense that you and I usually dive into on a Sunday. Did someone win a major championship or a tournament? Did someone lose a particular tournament? There is no question whatsoever. Ryan Fox won this. He did it with grit. He did it with execution. He did it with a level of confidence that I don't think we've seen in a player in a long time. And it was fun to watch. I think both you and I had some anxiety going into this final round because we both picked Sam Burns to win. We were both wrong, but there wasn't a lot of bass in our voice when we did it just because we knew the uncertainty going into this final round. We knew the golf course was only going to get fiery. The winds were going to come up. I don't think I anticipated the way that even played out, though. I mean, you had four, five players over the course of an afternoon, and keep in mind, Cam Young finished up about roughly 2 hours before Ryan Fox finally closed everything out. I didn't anticipate that kind of spread. I didn't anticipate that those types of nerves. The only thing we saw was players going backwards. But we're going to get into this on Wednesday. You and I are going to do sort of a major championship preview pod on Wednesday, but this by far is the major I'm going to remember.
Oh, wow. This is the major that you're going to be remembering most. It is, I think, when you sort of zoom out. We're going to talk about this probably in a couple of days. We have really been blessed over the past couple of years with basically the biggest names, the best players in the sport capturing major championships. I know one of the storylines, particularly after the Masters, was like, is anyone else going to pop up? Yeah, you're going to have the occasional Wyndham Clark. You're going to have the occasional J.J. Spahn. But it was Rory. It was Scotty. It was Xander, who had really dominated the major championships over the past couple of years. And this year in particular, whether it was Aaron Rye, whether it was Wyndham Clark again coming from the depths of despair and his redemptive arc, and now Ryan Fox, who is outside what the top 50 in the FedEx Cup standings, had just two top 10 finishes. He's the lowest ranked in the official world golf ranking to win an Open since Darren Clark back in 2011. It did not necessarily come out of nowhere, but it certainly was a surprise, and I would argue it was a pleasant surprise. I thought overall, Rex, there was an element of a fun competitive tension that we had in this final round. When you think back to the PGA Championship a couple months ago at Aronimink, that was really a free-for-all on the back nine. We were just sort of waiting for a player to seize the moment and grab it and have the best back nine of his career and win a major championship. Aaron Rye obviously did that, going 6-under for his last 11 holes, one of the best stretches we've seen since Cam Smith, 2022, Jack Nicklaus, 1986. I mean, that was sort of the company that Aaron Rye was keeping in Philadelphia. Ryan Fox did not quite get to that point, but with four birdies in his last six holes and the manner in which he did so with some pretty macho driving, shaking off some really bad breaks with where his ball was winding up in the bunker, He saw the opportunity, and he seized it over the final 90 minutes.
I love the idea that he told his caddy on the 18th hole, the 72nd hole, that I'm going to hit driver here. I'm going to take it on, and I'm going to live with the consequences. You don't get that sort of honesty very often in a major championship for someone who hasn't won a major championship. Let's be clear. Ryan Fox has accomplished a lot in his life. I love that in his post-round interview, he talked about it. If you'd have asked me on Wednesday, are you happy with my career? Absolutely. I'm over the moon based on where he started in New Zealand and how he felt like I just need to play my way on some tour, any tour all around the world. And his path is certainly fascinating. But to get to that point, and this is by far the biggest moment of your entire career, and you decide, you know what? I'm just going to hit driver. I'm going to hit it as hard as I possibly can, and we're going to see where we ended up. You talk about those four birdies over the last six holes. Yes, that was very impressive, and I think that's sort of the snapshot. If you're going to do one line about what won this for Ryan Fox, that's going to be it. But it's really the birdie on 16 from about 10 feet. I think that put him right there in the lead. It was a bounce back. He had bogeyed the 15th hole. He really seemed like he was losing some momentum. That was big. And then obviously what he did on 18. And they did a great job of breaking this down on live from, because let's go back. Like, if you want to do the origin story, go back to Saturday when he hit an 8-iron out of the bunker, which is just right of the fairway on 18. And I think he did this thing to his caddy when he hit it, because he cleared the lip by about that much. And he was taking on that exact same bunker on Sunday, knowing that, this is the biggest shot of my life. I have to be able to pull it off. He pulled it off. And then, of course, it was a 9-iron in. He pulled that off and took absolutely no time whatsoever. We want to talk about pace of play. That was the amazing part. Right. But it's taking on those exact same bunkers that the day before almost did him in on Saturday afternoon. And you can argue now in retrospect, they did do in Cam Young. He ended up in that bunker, ended up making a mess of it, getting out, ended up making a really good bogey just to keep himself in the conversation late into the afternoon. But it's just it's an amazing performance. It was amazing execution.
If Ryan Fox cleared the bunker by this much on Saturday to close out that 62, Cameron Young missed clearing the lip on that bunker by this much. Yes, it wasn't even remotely close for Cameron Young. We're going to get into him in a second. I do want to put a pin in Ryan Fox's last six holes, because you mentioned sort of the aggressiveness with the driver. We saw that on 13 where he busted at 375, left him just a lob wedge into one of the most difficult holes on the golf course. We saw it again on 18, as you mentioned, hitting at 330, leaving himself just a 9-iron in on a hole that prior to Ryan Fox arriving had yielded just 4 birdies all day long. This was really one of the most interesting storylines that I was monitoring throughout the week, was how aggressive players were going to be and would they finally alter their strategy. Remember when you and I talked on Wednesday, we're like, oh, I really think there's like 3 different ways to play this golf course. You could either do what essentially Bob McIntyre did in round 1, which was almost take driver out of the bag. Lucas Herbert actually did take driver out of the bag, lay well back, leave longer shots into the green, and attack the golf course that way. You could do what Scottie Scheffler did, which was essentially not necessarily be fearful of the pop bunkers that were dotting many of the fairways, but you had to take them on. And you had to do so by plotting and hitting really quality shots, which Scottie Scheffler did for the majority of the week. Or you could do what I would argue that Bryson DeChambeau was doing, which was take driver almost exclusively and hit it as hard as humanly possible and just sort of deal with the consequences, knowing that you're going to have a wedge and probably make your hay that way. Ryan Fox, throughout the course of the weekend, and again, he was outside the top 50 at the halfway point, became more aggressive on the weekend, and it paid off handsomely, shooting 62, 68. And I would argue that philosophy, that mindset, that aggression really became prevalent and really became, I would say, the winning strategy for a lot of players, or the successful strategy, I should say, for a lot of players, because it was so burned out. It was so difficult to find the fairways, and the penalty for laying back and mishitting that shot, either then kicking into the rough and having less control with a longer club, or finding one of the fairway bunkers, like it became essentially a half-shot penalty. So why not just take all of the pop bunkers essentially out of the equation, hammer it down there, and live with the consequences? And Ryan Fox, in particular on that back nine, was really threading the needle and really putting himself in position to score.
I'm just sitting here thinking of how many reports that Todd Lewis and I did over the course of the week about long irons being play and 2-irons, and how this is going to be one of those unique tests. And I was talking with Adam Scott this afternoon and sort of asked him how you would assess my week, and he sort of shook his head and he goes, for 2 days I thought I knew what I was doing around this golf course, and I'm sitting at home watching the coverage and everyone is hitting driver all over the lot, and I realized on the weekend that I just have to do it, and sometimes you just get it wrong. So I take a little bit of solace that it also kind of fooled Adam Scott. I think a lot of the pundits were fooled by this golf course just by the conditions, but you're absolutely right. I will put a bit of a footnote in it, because I don't want the narrative to be that Ryan Fox somehow walked around this golf course hitting driver recklessly and somehow was able to win this tournament, because that wasn't the case at all. He led the field in strokes game putting, which is an amazing stat, but he did it by almost 2.5 shots over the guy who was in second place. He putted lights out. He hit his irons very, very well. And yeah, he drove the ball well, especially coming down the stretch. I can't stress this enough. The idea that he took these dangers on, that he decided, watching everyone around him fall away one by one. Siwoo Kim had a chance to win this tournament. He fell away over a course of a couple of holes. Ryan Gerard fell away early over the course of a couple of holes. Cameron Young could have closed it out. It seemed as if he was going to, again, 2 hours before the leaders teed off, it looked like he was going to close them out. He could have gotten to 11, even 12 under par. And that clearly would have been the mark. And yet he ended up in one of these dangerous situations. And yet somehow Ryan Fox didn't do it. It was an incredible performance.
It was crazy because the golf course was so baked out. It was so brown. It was so crispy. It was so crunchy, at least in the fairways and the rough. And then the greens, as you reported throughout the week, were sort of the same level of firmness, the same level of speed, the same sort of odd mix of brown and green for the majority of the golf tournament. But the golf course itself, non-putting surfaces, was so thirsty that the rough just sort of essentially died. It just wilted. And even offline tee shots, it would just sort of scamper in there. And we really didn't see all that many balls wind up in completely disastrous, terrible spots where guys were just hacking out. It would just sort of trundle and find the thickest patch of grass, which again, from that point,
if you avoided the fairway bunkers, you were absolutely fine.
Yeah. Like Scottie Scheffler on 13 got a really unfortunate break where his ball essentially was half submerged in sand, was only able to extricate it a few feet. Other than that, it's hard to remember a tee shot that really wound up in a terrible spot because the ball would just sort of find and cruise along the rough line. Again, that did not factor for Ryan Fox over the last six holes. 13, hit it straight down the middle. 14, was able to be just left of the green in two shots on the par five, got up and down for a birdie. He got a really bad break on 15. Thought he hit actually was one of his best shots of the entire final round, about a yard or two from what he thought was going to be a 25-footer for birdie on the 240-yard par three. Instead, the ball ricochets from like the right edge of the pop bunker, vaults in left, and completely stymied in the back left corner. Has no shot recs other than to play backwards. Gets it up and down, a great hard driving pitch shot to 6 feet, ended up making that one for bogey, which I would argue was probably the most clutch, most crucial shot of his championship push. We saw what happened on 16, fairway, 10-footer. 17, another bad break with the ball just barely trundling into the bunker, doesn't really get upset at all, ends up having a pretty good look for birdie and misses it. And then 18, drives it right down the middle with the entire tournament on the line, that closing stretch. Was Aaron Rye-esque and certainly memorable among the major championships in 2026. I did want to touch on his pace of play, which I thought was incredible. It was sensational. It was almost a little bit jarring, I must say, for Rex, a player with everything on the line, to take just 22 seconds on his winning putt by the time that Sam Burns plucked his ball out of the cup and by the time that Ryan Fox had stroked his eventual winning putt.
I was standing next to Mike Tirico, of course, of NBC, the legend with the NBC, and both he and I looked at each other how quickly he actually stepped in, because the crowd, you could still hear, was still rustling. They were still cheering because Sam Burns had putted out. And I will say it was a little weird because Sam Burns putted it pretty much to tap in range, and Sam decided to putt out, which is, you normally do that in a situation where a player has a chance to win a tournament, but this was a 12-footer. It's not as though he had a tap-in. It's not as though you were expecting, yes, of course, he's going to make that putt. And the crowd was still wrestling. They were still moving around. You could still hear some sounds like reverberating around the golf course. And that's kind of the way Ryan Fox plays. I think Brandel Chambly brought this up on Live From, and I hadn't even thought about it. When he won the Canadian Open 2 years ago, he probably hit the shot of his life. It was a 3-wood going into the final hole, essentially for eagle. He two-putted for birdie to win, but it was an amazing shot. And I remember talking with him about it this year at the Canadian Open, about how he feels in clutch moments. And now you fast forward to this situation, and you're right. He stepped in faster than I've ever seen a player with a major championship, a tournament. It doesn't matter. Anything on the line, and that's his pace. And you have to give him credit that he didn't allow the moment to become too big. And I think that's a lesson for everyone to learn.
I mean, it was shocking, Rex. Like, Sam Burns had barely cleared the stage. The crowd was still sort of having a smattering of applause by the time that Ryan Fox was already sort of stepping into his shot. He took the two quick practice strokes and he brushed in the putt. Again, 22 seconds is unheard of. We're talking about sort of a 40-second shot clock. I know they had that in TGL. That's sort of the standard for typical PGA Tour shots. To do it in 22 seconds, when the clock really wouldn't have even started at that point, if you're thinking about it, because Sam Burns had barely even exited stage left at that point. It was a big talking point afterward. It's going to be the lead item in the Live From newsletter with Rex and Lavers. It's going to be in inboxes on Monday morning. Just diving into this, the idea of how decisive and how clear-minded Ryan Fox approaches the game and approaches his shot selection. I talk with his caddy, Dean Smith, as well. For Ryan Fox, Rex, it's a way for him to, like, the less time he has to think, the fewer bad thoughts can creep into his mind, which I think is a pretty powerful tool as well. He says, look, we're playing golf. It's really not that hard to play decisively and to play quickly. Most often, you're probably just choosing between two clubs. Your caddy should be figuring out the win for you. The shot selection, the shot shape, the shot trajectory, there's really only so many options. And actually this week, he was saying he and his caddy, Dean Smith, were actually trying to have less conversation. Ryan Fox wanted to own the shot that he was going to be hitting. He was choosing the shot, and then he was verbalizing it to his caddy, allowing him to create shots. Obviously, we know with the wind, we know with the bounces, the shot shapes and trajectories, it's a little bit different from the week in, week out on the PGA Tour, but it was aspirational stuff. I have never seen a player play so quickly with a major championship on the line. It was really mind-blowing to watch, particularly on the 18th.
And it was reactionary, and you don't get that very much in golf. You get it in other sports, certainly in football, when you talk about you don't have a lot of time to think when a running back coming at you at full speed. The same thing in baseball. If you're on third base in the hot corner and you get a line drive, you're not thinking about form or anything else. It's all reactionary. But in golf, you have so much time. And I think this speaks to sort of Ryan Fox's origin story. I mean, his father is a legend. He's a Hall of Famer, played for the All Blacks back in New Zealand. And I love the story that he said. He talked about trying to follow his father, and he realized that I'm not nearly as talented as him when it comes to that particular sport, but he was able to bring those same ideals over to golf, because today it was reactionary. When you look at what he did in the middle of the 18th fairway, it was a 9-iron. It was a perfect yardage. He knew exactly how he wanted to execute it, but to step in and to do it that quickly, I think, is an example of a player who didn't let the moment become too big. And we've talked about the putt. Like, there was no secondary thoughts. It was, I just need to step in and do my routine and just let the national athleticism that I have take over. That's what he did. And I'll also go back to the idea that if you start digging into who Ryan Fox is as a player, and I've had this conversation with him and his agent before, I think you can go back to 2022 when he was a European Tour player playing exclusively on the DP World Tour before he made his way over to the PGA Tour. He should have been on that President's Cup team. He wanted to be on that President's Cup team. I've had multiple conversations with him about it. I'm not quite sure why Trevor Immelman decided to keep him off, probably because he was exclusively on the European Tour, not a PGA Tour player, but he was a perfect fit for that team and that golf course at Quail Hollow, long golf course. He's a big, long hitter, but he's talked a lot about how that motivated him. And then the same thing happened 2 years ago when he was sort of kept off that team as well. I love sort of how this player has worked his way up by being motivated by these types of, I don't want to call them perceived slights, because I don't think Trevor Immelman had anything against him, but he's able to motivate himself pretty late in his career to get to this point.
And now he's going to get to be on the International President's Cup team, which is very likely to get crushed by the Americans in just a couple months' time at Medina. One final point that I wanted to mention about Ryan Fox. And it is ironic. It is ironic because of how quickly he plays, sort of how late of a bloomer he has been in his golf career. If you're not familiar with Ryan Fox's career path, it's pretty remarkable. Didn't even pick up the sport until he was a teenager. Didn't turn pro until the age of 25. Was almost going to give it up. He told the story a couple hours ago in the media center. It was the third to last event on the Australasian Tour. His dad was caddying for him. He said, why are you even playing if you're this miserable? He said, it's supposed to be fun. So they finally sort of embraced that attitude, played well that week, kept his card, played great the following year, and was sort of off and running. But here's a player, Rex, as you mentioned, didn't even get his European Tour card until the age of 30, didn't get his PGA Tour card until the age of 37, and now here he is at the age of 39, the third oldest recent major champion between Tiger Woods, 2019 Masters, and Phil Mickelson, of course, 50 years old at the 2021 PGA Championship. Brian Fox, at the age of 39, is now a major champion. A couple other storylines from Sunday that we have to get to was Cameron Young, who finished second for the second time in the Open Championship. Had that Sunday 64 at St. Andrews. Remember, this one was actually even better, shooting a Sunday 63, getting into the clubhouse at 9 under par. And then he waited and he waited and he waited to see if it would hold up. Eventually finished one shot shy. But what do you make of Cam Young's bid to become a first-time major winner that just fell one shot shy, Rex?
Fall back on the cliche again. Again, we talk about all the time. Did he win? Did he lose it? Whatever the case may be. Cam Young did everything he possibly could. Yes, he made a bit of a mess on 18, but as we pointed out, it turned out to be a pretty good bogey considering what was on the line and what transpired behind him. We have seen over the course of this week where earlier tee times were able to take advantage of the better conditions. That was the case again for Cameron Young. He took advantage of a bit of an earlier tee time. The wind wasn't up. You and I walked to the golf course just before breakfast because we had to get our brekkie because it was our last day to get that absolutely perfect breakfast in the compound, which I'm not even like, that's not an exaggeration. We're going to do
highlight of the week, folks.
There it is. There it is. Let the cat out of the bag on that one. It is the full, I guess you call it an English breakfast at this point, the full Monty. It was absolutely perfect. But he was able to take advantage of those conditions, and I kept going back to what he was able to do at TPC Sawgrass. Completely different situation. The spotlight was on him from the beginning at Sawgrass at the Players' Championship, and yet we keep going back to the drive on 18, longest in recorded history, or at least in ShotLink era history, on that hole with the tournament on the line. You and I have played that hole. We know how difficult that shot is, and he made it look easy. He made everything look easy on Sunday at Royal Birkdale.
He most certainly did. And this is going to be viewed historically as another close call. Entering the Open Championship, he had 7 top 10 finishes in the majors since 2022. That was already the most of any player over that span without a victory. It looked, Rex, for a very long time, and I'm sure your son Trevor was very invested in this as well. It looked for a very long time that Cam Young was going to equal Justin Thomas as a major winner who began the final round 7 shots behind, which, keep in mind, would have been the second largest final day comeback in a major championship since 1983. I think this final round was proof to Cam Young, and he's certainly learned this over the past year or so on the PGA Tour, that it's really hard to win on Sundays, doubly so at a major championship. And just sort of hanging around and scraping out pars becomes even more important. I don't think Cameron Young has anything to hang his head about at all. Obviously, he would love to have the shot back on 18, but he was going for it. He said he had a 6-iron, laid it wide open. No, he did not come even remotely close to clearing the lip, to clearing the revetted face, gave himself an opportunity to hold out the bunker shot greenside. But a Sunday 63 for Cameron Young, coupled with what we've seen at the Players' Championship, coupled with him playing in the final group at the Masters, this has been a transformative year in the life and career of Cam Young.
And I do think it's worth pointing out, our colleague Smiley Kaufman on Saturday night during Live From hit that exact same shot from the exact same bunker with a 6-iron. Opened it up, tried to play a big cut. He did not make it to the green, but he did make it out. So we give Smiley credit on that front. And I also want to say about Cameron Young, you and I have had this conversation the last few weeks about Player of the Year, and we'll probably get into it as we get closer to the playoffs. You and I both agree, and we very rarely do we agree with full voice, with full bass in our voice, that had Cam Young won today, I think both you and I agreed that he would have been the Player of the Year, hands down. It was going to be an easy decision. I'm not quite sure if him not losing the way he ended up not losing takes him completely out of the conversation as a lock. I think there's a lot that can happen over the next few weeks, but I do love the idea that Cameron Young has now put himself in this position time and time again. And you do have to look at the context. A year from now, we'll be looking back at the score and thinking to ourselves, oh, Cam Young didn't get it done on a Sunday. He did everything he possibly could. He just got beat by an amazing, gutsy performance. And I would argue Cam Young's performance was almost as gutsy.
It most certainly was. This was sort of indicative of what Cameron Young had done in all of the close calls and the near misses that he'd had on the PGA Tour. Remember, prior to winning the 2025 Wyndham Championship. If you look at what he'd done in the final rounds of all of his runner-up finishes, it was like 67 and change was his final round scoring average. This was just another example of him doing everything in his power. Yes, of course, he thinned that fairway bunker shot on 18, but he still shot 63 on the final day. It was by far the best performance of the day. It just wasn't quite good enough. Let's also, Rex, talk about Scottie Scheffler, who, yes, was hanging in on the back nine, just one shot shy, ultimately shot 67 and tied for fourth. There's so much to get to with Scottie. It was another great ball striking week. It was a frustrating week on the greens, even if he started to fill it up a little bit on the back nine. We had the wacky TIO relief that he received on 17, then the ultimate ball don't lie moment on 18, where he ultimately finished short. But where do you want to go with Scottie in that discussion?
I did a note that's going to run in the newsletter that we're going to send out tomorrow morning. And I think when you look at Scottie Scheffler's major championship season, it dovetails with what's really transpired over the rest of this season. It's been good, but not great. He has the one victory, of course, at the American Express. He finished inside the top 15 at all four major championships. Of course, he's had the opportunity, the Masters probably being the closest, is the best example of that. He's had opportunities to win, but something's just been a little bit off. And I think he touched on that after the round today. I think the words he used is, it just wasn't my week. And you kind of got that impression. You used the ball don't lie thing on 18, but he had a lot of those moments over the course of the week. 17 was weird. I would suggest anybody who is really curious how that went down and why exactly he didn't have to find his golf ball and still got a drop, which was probably 50 yards closer to the green. How can you lose a golf ball and make a birdie, I guess, would be the bottom line on this one. And everything was perfectly within the realm of rules, because I know we're going to be weaponizing rulings going forward based on what happened this week. But Scottie just followed the rules as they would have applied. They were looking for his golf ball. I thought this was the most interesting part. They were actually looking for his golf ball that essentially went into this, I guess, a corporate area is what you would call it. And once it was explained to Scottie and his team that the entire area was a TIO, that you got relief from the entire area and where he was going to be able to drop, he called everybody off the search. Stop looking right now, because only bad things were going to happen if someone found the ball and it was 100 yards back and not in that TIO area. Again, completely within his rights to stop looking for that golf ball. But you're right. I just think something was just a little bit off. Just like something's been a little bit off pretty much all season long ever since the American Express. It's not much. It's percentage points. It's a putt here and there where you can look at his stats, and it was strokes gained putting that held him back. I will say his iron play, his ball striking, strokes gained approach, much improved, certainly over last week when he missed the cut at the Scottish Open. And I think all of us maybe took a double take simply because that's not what we expected to hold him back. That's his go-to. That's his bread and butter. That didn't seem to be an issue. He left here a little bit confident with his ball striking, and he's playing next week at the 3M Open, and you would anticipate he's going to continue to make strides. But again, it is sort of indicative to what we've seen from him all season long.
Yeah, this was a microcosm exactly of what Scottie Scheffler has been befallen with for the entire 2026 season. I need to go back real quick. I'm going to be paying a $5 fine for being incorrect. Cameron Young shot 64 on Sunday, not 63. I've been dazzled by all the low numbers. Yep, $5 fine. Fred, it is coming your way. We have to touch, Rex. Obviously, yes, this was a great ball striking week for Scottie. He had tied for the most approach shots within 20 feet, went more than 60 holes without making a birdie putt longer than 7 feet. It was just, if we were frustrated watching, I can only imagine how Scottie Scheffler was feeling while he was actually in the middle of it. We have to go back to 17 because this was absolutely ridiculous. And if you somehow missed this, Scottie, first of all, on the tee, lost his mind at what was perceived to be another bad bounce with the ball. His tee shot kicking left. He was behind a dune, unable to see. I have little doubt that had Scottie been in the middle of the fairway like he was intending his ball to be, he wouldn't have even been over by the Claret's Hospitality section. But instead, it's a blind shot and hooked it way left. You mentioned, Rex, Scottie was telling fans, do not find this golf ball. Because they were virtually certain, that's the rule. You either you need to be virtually certain that a ball was in an area. How, Rex, in the year of our Lord 2026, can you not find your golf ball and yet receive free relief and have a great look at the green and end up making birdie, it's probably a larger discussion and one we can't fit into this 52-minute show. But like TIO relief at the championship level needs to be examined, because it makes no sense whatsoever that because you have this area that is surrounding this huge hospitality tent, you don't even need to find your golf ball for what was a very errant shot at that point in the championship. Again, it's not necessarily that like Scotty was using the rules to his advantage. I'm just saying the rule is absolutely outrageous to have free relief even if you don't find a golf ball. Just common sense.
I do think it's cute that during this week of all weeks, you're going to dig into that ruling, not any of the other rulings that maybe we've seen over the last couple of days. I do think that's interesting. And we can, since we spent so much time this week talking with Grant Moyer, who's the RNA's chief referee, we should probably just bring him in on the pod and get some clarification on it. You're right. It seems strange because someone brought this up during live from tonight. If you remember, I forget what hole it was maybe 12. During the WGC match play in Austin, it was a drivable par four, and every player would just airmail it over the green into what was corporate hospitality, knowing you could just get a free drop, and it was a chip and a putt, and you had a pretty good chance of making birdie every single time. I don't like it. I'm not quite sure how you get around it, because there is so much infrastructure now that go into tournaments. For better or worse, I think this one's here to stay, but sure, you should make this this is going to be your cause going forward, that you're going to get this changed.
Yes, this is what I'm going to be standing up for. The rule was applied properly. I'm not saying anything was nefarious. Scotty was absolutely within his rights, and the rule was applied properly by the RNA referee. He was there. It was not our buddy James, but it was somebody else who was following along with that group. But there is no way, Rex, that this was fair, and there was no way that this is protecting the field with what, again, was a terrible shot in the 71st hole of the championship. A couple other storylines before we take our first break. Bryson DeChambeau ejects on the final day, making a triple bogey, lost a golf ball on the 11th hole, ends up shooting 72 and tying for 14th. Tommy Fleetwood, the local hero, got within one shot, Rex, and then had three consecutive bogeys around the turn, ends up having a great moment on 18, nearly jars his approach, ends up making birdie and ties for fourth. And Sam Burns, yet another miss, 54-hole leader, made just a single bogey, ends up shooting a Sunday 72. Which of those three stories captivated you the most on Championship Sunday?
Fred is going to be shocked to hear this, but I think I'm going to write a column tomorrow morning, Monday morning, when I get to the airport. I should have some free time. The idea being that I was standing in sort of the primary area where all the TV interviews are going on. As Bryson was finishing up, and no, this is not breaking news. He did not talk to the media. Shocking. I know that. And Tommy Fleetwood was finishing up. And both those players sort of crossed in the night, as it were. And if I would have taken a snapshot of both of those players as they sort of brushed past each other, and you could see both of their faces, I think the takeaway would have been, well, one of those players clearly won this championship, and one of them must have finished dead last. It was Tommy Fleetwood. Obviously, that was happy. Everything that went into this week, it was emotional. It was special. Clearly, he wished he probably would have played better. However, he made it obvious from the very beginning of the week, I'm going to enjoy this regardless of the golf. Like, this is special. I grew up 5 minutes from here. He used to sneak on to Royal Birkdale as a kid. All of those storylines that we've talked about all week long. Bryson, on the other hand, all of the things we've touched on, what happened Thursday, not talking to the media, what happened Friday with the ruling that we can get into if you'd like. I think we pretty much covered the ruling that essentially cost him two strokes and probably a couple of hits to his reputation when you start threatening to walk away from a tournament because you don't like an outcome. Certainly that's something we're going to talk about going forward. Bryson looked like the guy that finished last. Tommy looked like the guy who won. They both finished exactly pretty much the exact same spot in the tournament. And I think there is something to be learned between those two players. I would pick both of them as sort of a paradigm of one is thoroughly enjoying his time as a professional, thoroughly enjoyed his time at Royal Birkdale for so many different reasons. And one, as I predicted, is leaving Royal Birkdale probably the most disappointed, not for the reasons that I would have guessed. I would have guessed that Bryson missed the cut again because that's what he did in the first three majors of the year. And there was nothing in his record that suggests he was ready to turn things around at Royal Birkdale, but he did, and he played well. And I can sit here and talk about how he's so polarizing and, at least on Friday, how childish he was. And I can also point to the idea that he's still really talented and he's still one of those players that just moves the needle in golf. And I think it's a shame that he cost himself a really good opportunity to win a major championship.
Yeah, Bryson avoided the DeSlambo as we build it heading into the championship. I do think there's something to...
we didn't build that. As a, you built that.
Yes, thank you very much. The progress he has made in this tournament in particular over the past couple years. I know it wasn't technically a top 10, but now three top 15s in the Open since 2022, whether it was St. Andrews, whether it was Port Rush, both of those tests were soft and scoreable. This one was firm and fiery, and I think he has some pretty good lessons that he could draw. We're going to talk about him a little bit more after the break. What a great week, though, for Tommy Fleetwood. I thought he really drew some lessons from what happened to Rory McIlroy 2019 to 2025 in Port Rush and that experience. If you remember 2019, Rory McIlroy sort of insulating himself from what that environment was going to be like, sort of regretted the way that he had gone about the entire thing and really wanted to embrace it. Being back home in Northern Ireland a year ago, it had a great experience. Tommy Fleetwood was loving it from the moment that he arrived on property, and he played great. I know it was disappointing. I know the three soft bogeys around the turn cost him this championship. For a player who's really in the prime of his career to feel the love fest and to comport himself the way that he did, to be thoughtful about the process and the journey and just how appreciative he was, I thought it was a great week for Tommy Ladd as well. I certainly think Sam Burns has to be disappointed by how the final round played out as well. As I mentioned, just a single birdie on the second hole after he stuffed it. It looked like he was going to be in charge. Just quite didn't quite have it with his ball striking, Rex. And after the par save on 13, I really thought that that was going to be sort of the kickstart for Sam Burns. Instead, he had a really poor bunker shot on 14 when he was just greenside in two. On 15, he missed a 20-footer. On 16, he missed the green from 150 yards. On 17, he said he drew a bad lie after a great tee shot on 17, looking like he was going to be able to attack the par 5, and then 18, unable to convert the birdie as well. Very similar to Augusta, when he was one shot off the lead heading into the final round. Very similar to Shinnecock in the U.S. Open, where he played great, shot 67 in that final round of the U.S. Open, but couldn't convert any of the 10-footers that he had over the past couple holes. And now this one, chance after chance after chance that went wanting. It was a great major championship season for Sam Burns. When you look at his cumulative scoring average, it was better than anybody besides Scotty Scheffler. It certainly made progress than what he had seen over the past couple of years with Sam Burns in the major championships. This one has to sting at the end of what had been a pretty good Grand Slam season.
And you and I had this conversation last night, and I was not trying to make the argument that I didn't think Sam Burns was going to win. Again, you and I both picked him to win. Not a lot of bass in our voices. And the reason there wasn't a lot of base in my voice is because of the things you just pointed out. Yes, he's given himself more opportunities. And as a player, that's all you can ask. And you're right, he is making progress. However, there are still some stumbles. And then we certainly saw that today. You look at the way, I think he birdied four straight starting at the ninth hole, if I'm not mistaken. And he never seemed to be right after that. I always felt like he was too rattled, didn't feel like he was able to pull it together. You had more confidence in him than I did. It's a stepping stone. It's a learning curve, but he still has a lot to learn.
Well, folks, Rex and I just set a record with a 38-minute opening block. Coming up after this short break, we'll be diving into some Love It or Lave It, talking about Bryson, talking about Rory, talking about Scotty Scheffler's major championship season, all that and more coming up next. All right, Rex, it is time for a major season-ending edition of Love It or Lave It. If you are new to the game, it's pretty simple. You either love an idea or you scoff at it. You're a curmudgeon, and you really don't like it. First topic for today, a player we just discussed in the opening segment, but did not go into all that much detail, Bryson DeChambeau. Very eventful week, not just on the golf course, not just with the rules committee, but also all of the off-course extracurricular activity, bypassing the media for the third consecutive major championship with all that surrounded Bryson DeChambeau, Rex, at Royal Birkdale. Should it have been proof that the PGA Tour should want Bryson back? Are you loving or laving the idea of that?
I love that idea for all the reasons you just pointed out and beyond. He is one of the most compelling and interesting men in golf right now, not just because of the way he plays golf, but because of his personality, the way when he is playing well, when he is happy, Bryson, and we see this with other players. I'm not trying to pick on Bryson on this front. He's so engaging and the crowds love him, but he could also be polarizing. And the argument on that front would be, and you and I have done this before, where every good story needs the hero. And we have plenty of heroes on the PGA Tour. Also needs a villain. And I'm not saying that Bryson wants to be the villain. And I don't want to shoehorn him into that. But if you look at what transpired over the last few days, polarizing means half the crowd was essentially for Bryson and half the crowd was against Bryson. I think when he finished up on Saturday, there was a perfect indication of that. When you heard shouts coming from the gallery, and one of them would be very critical about what they perceived as maybe him cheating on Friday in the incident that we've talked about on the fifth hole. And the other one was the RNA. It was criticism against the RNA for applying that rule, for turning this in to a circus. I think the PGA Tour should absolutely want him back. Huge caveat on the back end. Not on Bryson's terms. Love the idea. Not on Bryson's terms. And by that, I mean, Brooks Koepka got the get out of jail free card. So was John Rahm. He was offered it. So was Cameron Smith. He was offered it. And so was Bryson. He was offered it. In that moment, if they'd have taken it, it was understandable. But what Brooks has done over the last 7 months is a perfect pathway for every LIV player if they want to follow it. Over the last 7 months, he has stood in front of every microphone and answered every question, regardless of how difficult or pointed or stressful it was for him to answer. He has smiled. He has done the right things. If Bryson wants to do that, then absolutely. The PGA Tour would be better with Bryson than they are without him.
There is almost no way that I can envision a scenario in which Bryson DeChambeau is back on the PGA Tour in a full-time capacity, 15 to 23 events a year, and he's willing to jump through all the hoops that the PGA Tour should want him and need him to go through if he's going to be reintegrated to the PGA Tour landscape. I too, though, Rex, if you're just focusing on this week, I do think this week is ample proof that the PGA Tour should want and love the idea of Bryson DeChambeau being back on the PGA Tour. Because if you take away all of the sort of extracurricular stuff and the barking at the rules officials and being dragged into the fifth hole and boycotting the media and being really performative and attention-seeking and all of that stuff, his golf, Rex, for the most part at Royal Birkdale, was sublime. It was spectacular. Some of the tee shots that he hit over the first 36 holes, the approach shots, the new 3D printed irons, it certainly seems like he has something there. Some of the short game shots that he's able to pull off, his attitude, his competitiveness, his interactions with the fans, like it is really a fever dream when Bryson DeChambeau is playing well, which he did for the majority of the week. And it's a reminder that this guy is special, not quite generational with his accomplishments, but generational, I think, in the sense of his popularity and the style of play that he has. That's one aspect of it. All of the off-course drama that surrounds him and the competitive tension that he creates, not just inside the ropes, but also with his peers, Rory McIlroy standing in front of a microphone and calling him performative, essentially calling him fake and phony. We're talking about the PGA Tour and week in and week out regular season golf. We need that sort of friction. We need that sort of drama. We need that sort of compelling atmosphere and attitude among the best players on the PGA Tour on a week-in and week-out basis. That has been robbed from the PGA Tour since 2022. This was a perfect example that, yes, it's messy, it's complicated. At times it can be a little bit ugly, but that's the Bryson DeChambeau show. And on the PGA Tour, it would no doubt make it better. All right, speaking of Rory McIlroy, he was asked on Sunday evening if it was fair to say that his juices don't quite get flowing, Rex, for the PGA Tour and in particular the FedEx Cup playoffs as much as they used to now that he is a career Grand Slam winner. Are you loving or laving Rory, who's just sort of looking at the FedEx Cup playoffs and saying, meh?
I'm laughing the idea because he's being honest, and I don't think this is a stretch for anyone. We all have only so much bandwidth. And when it comes to Rory, we talked about this after he won the Masters last year. Where was the motivation going to come from after he reached the top of the mountain and he won the career Grand Slam? Well, we've seen it. He has shown up at the major championships and at these iconic venues, Pebble Beach being one he talked about, Shinnecock, clearly registered on his list. Going back to Portrush last year registered on that list. There's going to be times and moments throughout the year when he is going to want to peak, that he is interested, that he is motivated, that he is engaged. I don't know at this stage in his career if it's fair to expect him to be that way for over the course of, keep in mind, he's playing two tours. So you're estimating it's over the course of nearly 30 events over the course of a season. That's simply not going to happen. And it's also worth pointing out that whatever happens in 2028 with the PGA Tour schedule going forward, I don't want to say the focus is going to be off the playoffs, but it's clear that Brian Rolapp, the CEO of the PGA Tour, is going to lean into the regular season champion is going to be the champion. So whatever that last regular season event is, that's when they're going to celebrate this person who was the best golfer over the course of an entire season against the best golfer in the world. That makes sense to me because the playoffs never did. Playoffs and golf just never fit. You and I both have talked about this. So the idea that maybe this year he's not going to be engaged and next year he's not going to be engaged with the playoffs probably doesn't sit great with the folks in Ponte Vedra Beach. And I get that. Trust me. I know that it's going to make things only difficult for those who are trying to round up sponsors at 20 plus million dollar purses per year. But going forward, starting in 2028 and beyond, the focus is going to be on the regular season, the majors, the Players' Championship, the big events, whatever the case may be. That's enough for him not to sort of put on the face anymore and the farce maybe of him pretending to be excited when he gets to the PGA Tour playoffs.
I'm loving that Rory said this because I feel very similarly. And I think that has been the danger for the PGA Tour over the past couple of years, where they just keep sort of band-aiding the issue. And when Brian Rolapp signaled at the 2025 Tour Championship that they're going to be blowing up the competitive model and they're going to be looking at the playoff structure, they are essentially, Rex, telling golf fans that right now, this PGA Tour postseason kind of stinks and we need to change it. And it's just not compelling enough. And if the leader of the PGA Tour is voicing that to fans, then why should fans respond? Why should they be galvanized by that? Why should they be excited about what's forthcoming in the PGA Tour schedule? And it's going to be like this in 2026, where once again, all that matters is just being among the top 30, and then it's just going to be a free-for-all, and it's just a regular run-of-your-mill, four-round, 72-hole stroke play tournament at East Lake at a time of year when everyone's focus is sort of going elsewhere. It is unexciting, it is unspectacular, and it is why the PGA Tour is going to be blowing it up in future models. So yes, I totally agree with what Roy McIlroy is saying. He's not juiced for the FedEx Cup playoffs because, quite frankly, PGA Tour executives aren't juiced for the FedEx Cup players either. That's why they are going to be changing it. All right, final topic, Rex, for Love It or Loud It for today is Royal Birkdale. And the idea, at least heading into the week, that Royal Birkdale might be the best test of Open Championship golf. Now that we've gone through yet another edition, the 11th, the most all-time in the Open Championship Rota, do you believe, loving or laughing, the idea that Birkdale is the best open venue?
I love that idea. I love Royal Birkdale. I think Royal Birkdale proved itself as a very unique test. And each one of the Open Championship venues has its own identity. And I think we saw that this week, not just with the firm and fast conditions. That's sort of mother nature. But I think the golf course itself, even after the renovations and the changes, and I think a lot that went into the changes, some folks were second-guessing it. I'll actually point to 15. It was not the disaster or the difficulty that everyone seemed to think it was. I think it actually played really well. They only played it at 240 plus yards once over the course of the week. So that probably factors into it as well. However, I would argue Muirfield is probably the best test, at least from a golf course and a design standpoint. I think Port Rush has proven itself as a really good test. And then next year we have St. Andrews. So I don't think that's fair to say that.
Old course is the most historic. Port Rush is the most fun. Muirfield, in my opinion, is the best Open Championship test. Although I did think Birkdale played spectacularly. I thought the setup was great. I thought it was a lot of fun. You had great variety of holes. I did not remember it hardly at all from 2017. And what I did see in 2025, I liked a lot. Just a great variety of holes. And I thought it was a spectacular venue once again. All right, coming up after this break, we're going to have final thoughts from the week that was the 154th Open Championship. All right, Rex, so ends our week in Southport, England. The major championship season is over. The Open Championship is over. There is much to look forward to, despite what Roy McIlroy said about the upcoming FedEx Cup playoffs. But as you look back at this week in particular at Royal Birkdale, what will be some of your most enduring memories?
I'm going to leave breakfast to you because clearly you want to dig into that. We found a barbecue place, probably the best barbecue I've ever found in the UK. You, of course, are playing hurt. You cracked your tooth at said barbecue place. I don't want to name names. However, I still think it was very good barbecue. I love the leaderboard. I love the way Ryan Fox did everything that we talked about coming down the stretch. And, of course, I love Rural Birkdale for all the reasons that we pointed out. I think it's one of the unique tests in golf. However, I'm going to go to the RNA. And they get it right. And no, I'm not talking about rulings because we had some really insane rulings over the course of the last few days that I don't think anyone wants to recap. Now, I'm talking about golf course setup. And I think there was a moment of panic early in the week when we had a couple of 62s that matched the men's low record in a major. And I love the idea that the RNA just sticks with the game plan, that they let Mother Nature and the golf course be the golf course. And that's what we got this week.
Yeah. I will probably quibble with the idea of the 72nd hole pass as being something that the RNA gets right, but that's neither here nor there. I will say, Rex, this is probably my most fun, my favorite week of the year. There's just something special about walking to the golf course. There's something special about the people who are excited to see Americans like you and I. We had so many fans of the show who came up to us taking pictures. It's a lot of fun just to embrace different cultures, even if those cultures, Rex, and barbecue in England is something that I'm not necessarily going to be seeking out in the future after cracking my tooth. And yes, I will be seeing the dentist at 9:20 a.m. Eastern time on Tuesday. So I'll be playing hurt once again for the midweek podcast. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lab. It's been a lot of fun bringing you guys the mini podcast, the preview podcast, now the recap podcast from Royal Birkdale. We're going to have another edition of the Live From Newsletter with Rex and Lav in your inboxes on Monday morning. Sign up for that. golfchannel.com/Rex and Lav. Plenty of good news, knows, and nuggets in there. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days for a preview. Yes. It's going to be Am Open.